The Chiropractic Lawyer with Dr. Guy DeMartino, a podcast designed to share information, advice, and practical tips for the practicing healthcare provider, patient, and lawyer. Now, let's get started at the intersection of law and medicine.
I'm here today at the Florida Chiropractic Physicians Association meeting with Dr. Bill Doggett from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dr. Doggett, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Bill Doggett. I have been a chiropractor in New Mexico, particularly in Albuquerque, since I graduated from LACC in 1983. I hold a diploma in chiropractic orthopedics, which I got in 1987, and have practiced in a family practice atmosphere for the past 34 years now. The positions I've held in the state include the president of the State Chiropractic Association, the New Mexico Chiropractic Association, or for two separate terms. I've been involved in the legislative process in New Mexico for about 15 years. I was the board chairman of the chiropractic examining board when we changed our scope of practice to allow the certification of advanced practice chiropractors.
Now let's talk a little bit about this. When did the process start in New Mexico to increase chiropractor scope of practice?
It actually started in around 2005. We began to have discussions amongst ourselves, a core group of chiropractors in New Mexico, about the desirability of increasing the scope of practice to include some pharmaceutical, or as I prefer to call it, chiropractic pharmacotherapy, additional subspecialty within the profession. During those early discussions, we approached and had lengthy discussions with the medical board and the medical society to try to get their concurrence with our plans, and actually we received very favorable cooperation from them at the onset of our discussions. We first passed our initial legislation in 2008, and that included the addition of a core curriculum of 100 hours designed to familiarize chiropractors with herbal and pharmaceutical interventions, and then a requirement that they have been at least 3 years in clinical practice, so that the clinical experience was a part of their chiropractic education.
Bill, how many doctors, when you said an initial group of you got together, how many doctors are we talking about?
Literally, it started with four or five of us. Now, the first class of advanced practice doctors included 140 doctors within the state. And those 140 went on to the majority of them. I believe 120 of them went on to complete the certification in advanced practice so that there's 120 out of about 450 chiropractors licensed in New Mexico that hold the advanced practice certification.
Now, when you all met in 2005, what were your frustrations in practice? Why were you all looking at possibly trying to advance chiropractic scope of practice?
Well, it really started with the understanding that based on our current statute at that time, the chiropractors were not, in fact, classified as physicians in New Mexico. We were classified as physicians according to Medicare in the federal level, but in New Mexico, in order to be classified as a physician, you had to be part of the Drug and Cosmetic Act. Acupuncturists were part of the Drug and Cosmetic Act, dentists were part of the Drug and Cosmetic Act, and of course, osteopaths and medical physicians were part of the Drug and Cosmetic Act, along with nurses and physician's assistants. But because we weren't written into there, actually in the 70s we were written out of there, the realization that we were not indeed physicians in New Mexico, we felt we needed to be added to that act. Now, in order to be added to the act was not a big deal. We could get that legislation passed without a problem, but we thought, well, if we're going to be added to the Drug and Cosmetic Act, how far into that do we want to go? And decided that we should at least delve into the areas where we can have the use of alternative methods of administration. Homeopathics are a great deal of chiropractors use them in New Mexico, and there are methods of homeopathic administration that include the injection of homeopathics, particularly for musculoskeletal conditions. Well, the injection of anything into the body classifies that substance as a drug. And so in order to be able to inject a homeopathic into one of our patients, we had to also have that as part of our formulary within the scope of practice. And so that was where the expansion of the rights and privileges of chiropractors really came to be. So it started out as a desire to be officially qualified as physicians, and it ended up being that since we're in the Drug and Cosmetic Act, let's have some utilization for those doctors who choose to expand their practices.
Once you all decided to try to increase the scope of practice, how long did it actually take until you saw a change in your law?
It was almost 3 years. The initial discussion started. We had some organizational issues to deal with within the chiropractic community. We wanted to gather the number of people we thought would be receptive to or desirous of expanding their practices. And then we had the fortunate circumstance of having one of the most powerful legislators in the state be a very pleased chiropractic patient. And so Representative Lujan, the Speaker of the House, agreed to carry our bill, and that really is where it started to become much more of a real thing in our mind. We knew that with having that kind of support, that we had a good chance of getting things passed, regardless of any kind of opposition.
So give me an idea, so the folks listening to this will understand, what kind of war chest did you all need to get this legislation going, and lobbyists and everything that you need for the legislative process?
Well, our lobbyist runs us about $25,000 or $28,000 a year. Now, that may have changed since that time, but she was really instrumental in helping us through the process. I mean, yes, we had the sponsor that was the Speaker of the House, but we still had to go through House and Senate committees. We had to have Senate support. Our lobbyist, who was also the lobbyist for the AACP, is a lobbyist for the nurse practitioners, and she took the nurses through the advanced practice procedures in New Mexico. So she was very experienced in how to couch the arguments for inclusion, and was instrumental in helping us get through these committees and onto the floor of the House and Senate.
So am I hearing you saying that it only cost about $100,000?
I believe that may even be more than it cost us. I mean, we really had the confluence of all the good events. We had the right people in charge of the development of the program at the chiropractic level. We had the ultimately right sponsor. We had an experienced lobbyist, and we had a friendly governor.
Now, within chiropractic, there's definitely a wide variety of chiropractic physicians. Did you have opposition within the profession?
Within the profession, we did not have opposition to our initial law, somewhat because there is only, even at this time, there's only 17 members of the International Chiropractic Association, which are the primary people that oppose any expansion of practice rights. They were totally unaware of the proposal of the legislation. They were very ambivalent about any kind of involvement in chiropractic community or in the legislative processes. So I think they were caught by surprise. We passed the legislation, and then all of a sudden there was an upheaval of interest. They claimed that they just were aware but didn't think it would ever have a chance.
So in New Mexico government, somebody had to present a law either on the House side or the Senate side to a health services committee or something along that line? How did it work?
Yes, we had to present it. It gets presented to the House. In this case, it was written on the House side. It got presented. It got assigned committees. In the House side, it got assigned two committees. And then on the Senate side, it got assigned two additional committees. The Health and Human Services Committee can't think of the exact name of it, but the Judiciary Committee on both sides, and Commerce and Industry.
When you testified before either a committee or the open legislature, what were the legislature's major concern with increasing chiropractic scope of practice? What did you hear from the politicians?
Their major concern was really that we make sure that the legislation included appropriate education for those chiropractors to operate in a safe and efficient manner. That was really their biggest concern. There was no concern about the difference in philosophy in chiropractic. There wasn't a concern about opposition from the allopathic community, because they actually stood up and supported our bill, the initial one. And so that was really the primary concern, was that we create an educational forum that adequately trained those chiropractors that wish to go ahead and expand their practice.
Did you receive any opposition from any health profession outside the chiropractic profession during this initial licensure?
No, we didn't. We actually did have the lobbyists for the medical society stood up and supported that legislation on the initial presentation.
So what are you allowed to do in your practice in New Mexico now that you're an advanced chiropractic physician?
No, but let me correct you. I'm not an advanced practice chiropractic physician.
Okay, explain that.
I'm a general chiropractic physician. I chose not to take the advanced training, although I do feel and certainly 100% support those doctors that wish to increase their education and use those procedures. I'm a chiropractic orthopedist. I'm very happy in that level of practice, but the addition of advanced practice certificates allowed me as a chiropractor to refer those patients that needed something beyond the general scope of chiropractic at that time to be treated by other chiropractors that had the advanced scope. So someone who needed homeopathic injection into a shoulder for a rotator cuff injury that wasn't responding to conservative care, I didn't have to send to an orthopedist who would have injected them with a corticosteroid. I could send them to a chiropractor who would inject them with a homeopathic product that was certainly less toxic and equally as effective to decrease inflammation and resolve the problem. The other kinds of things that chiropractors can do, advanced practice chiropractors, their formulary includes ibuprofen at a prescription level, diclofenac, naproxen, estrogen, Armour thyroid, progesterone, testosterone, and of course the injection of homeopathic products. So there's a good ability to interact within the chiropractic community rather than sending those patients outside the chiropractic community, where they may get some comments regarding the general allopathic disagreements with chiropractic care. The chiropractors that I was able to refer those patients to reinforced the need for conservative chiropractic management of their problems and sent those patients back to me for treatment after the procedures.
Now, your point is fantastic. So here you supported increased scope of practice, but you chose to continue to practice within your scope. And what you're doing is you're using advanced practice chiropractors to treat people that less invasively or with less detriment, right? Is that what I hear you say?
That's correct. That's correct. I found that, you know, referral within our own profession was preferable to me than referral outside the profession, where that chiropractic care might be interrupted by a medical change of procedures.
And the chiros that you refer to, they don't steal your patients?
Not at all. In fact, they reinforce what we're doing. They reinforce the understanding of the value of spinal manipulation and soft tissue therapies, the kind of things we do in the office, and they encourage the patients to come back for the treatment plan as proposed.
And now that the law's changed, nobody's forcing you to prescribe ibuprofen, right?
Correct.
And nobody's telling you that you have to inject your patients.
That's right. I practice just the same way I did before the law was changed. But now I have a greater toolbox to use within the chiropractic community. I don't have to depend on orthopedic referral or even neurologic referrals. We have one of our chiropractic neurologists is also an advanced practice chiropractor, so I can get some of my neurologic consults done within the chiropractic profession.
There is going to be an element of the chiropractic profession that's going to say, well, this is just going to be a race to the bottom. that that our profession is going to just become subsumed by pharmacology. What do you have to say to that?
I just point out the this is 2015, so the last 7 years of chiropractors doing this in New Mexico has not seen that. Now, if it's not changing the general practice of chiropractic for those physicians that have the prescriptive authority over a seven-year period, it's just not going to happen. Yes, there will be rogue chiropractors if there are states that allow plenary license and full-scope pharmaceutical authority. There will be rogue chiropractors that abuse that privilege, no different than the rogue medical doctors and the rogue osteopaths and the rogue physician therapists that abuse their procedures too. Yes, we're going to have outliers, but that's the board's responsibility to identify and discipline those outliers in an appropriate manner.
Okay, here's another objection that I'm sure that you're going to hear. That's great for the doctors who have been practicing 10, 15, 20 years, who are steeped in chiropractic practice and chiropractic philosophy and have seen the benefits of chiropractic in practice. But what about the next generation of chiropractor that day one they come into the state of New Mexico and they take their advanced chiropractic licensure? What's going to happen to that generation of chiropractor? Are we going to lose the chiropractor going to lose its way?
No, because the current ability to get an advanced practice certification in New Mexico requires you have fully graduated from a chiropractic college and that you take the additional training only offered now at National and at the University of Western States. That's another year program in chiropractic pharmacotherapy and sports medicine, and that they will have that period of time to integrate their chiropractic education with their advanced practice education. We have not seen any change in the conservative approach. Again, I think chiropractic cannot be defined as spinal manipulation. Chiropractic is defined by the paradigm that we start off with. The most conservative methods, musculoskeletal and mechanical kinds of therapy to deal with those problems that are primarily musculoskeletal in nature. Now, there's other conditions that I think chiropractors can treat and can treat appropriately, but the spinal manipulation is always a primary part of all those treatments. And we've seen that with our advanced practice chiropractors. All of them use spinal manipulation in addition to all the rest of the tools in their toolbox.
One final objection, and we'll finish this interview. What about adverse incidents? I know that you've been instrumental with the board. Have there been any adverse incidents that have been reported to the state that you know of from chiropractors that have increased the scope of practice and are possibly using some pharmacology in their practice?
No, there's been no reported incidences of abuse or misuse of the prescription authority. Yes, there has been one complaint to the board, but that was from an insurance company that was questioning the substances that were being used by the doctor and wondering were they a part of the formulary. So that was really the only board incident that was addressed.
What about adverse incidents to patients? Do you know of any bad outcomes where somebody who has taken an NSAID and had a bleeding ulcer or died, or a chiropractor that was doing an injection in the spine and actually, you know, pierce through the facet and hit the spinal cord or anything along those lines?
Nothing along those lines. And actually, the chiropractors, even with the continued education beyond their advanced training, don't do spinal injections. They may do prolotherapy around the sacrum. They may do prolotherapy in the extremities. But facet injections just aren't in their they haven't been trained in those specifically. The chiropractors that are trained to do more advanced injection procedures have continued their advanced practice education alongside medical and osteopathic physicians learning to do prolotherapy, learning to do joint injection therapies in the same manner that the medical physicians learn. And so they're considered quite well trained and qualify equally with their allopathic colleagues.
Dr. Doggett, if anybody who is listening to this interview has any questions, would you be willing to answer their questions?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, my email is rodeodc, that's RODEODC @AOL.com.
Dr. Doggett, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
What would make a lawyer podcast without a disclaimer in the end? Here goes. Just because you listened to this podcast or participated by submitting your questions doesn't make Guy DeMartino your lawyer. If you have a legal issue that you would like to discuss, you should contact a lawyer of your choice. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.